Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, this is Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. What a week it has been. Oh, my goodness. I don't know where to start, really. I'm not about to wade in and sound ignorant. I've had some conversations with Sober Club members, and my heart just goes out to you right now if you're affected by everything that's going on. We're all affected, right? And the only thing I can say is I think we just have to focus on being part of the solution and not the problem. And if you have suggestions of any people that I could interview, then let me know. I'm really, really open to knowing about, you know, people who would be great for the podcast, who we can chat to. But yeah, be part of the solution, not the problem. That's kind of the only thing I'd like to really share with you on that, on the whole issue, everything that's going on right now. And kindness, you come back to kindness, don't we? Kind of has to underpin absolutely everything. It's been interesting in the press this week. There's yet more about the role of alcohol and the part it's played during the coronavirus lockdown. We've said before that sales of alcohol have risen, and it's looking now like they're saying that one in four British people are drinking more alcohol than before. A quarter of a million, they say, are downing more booze. A new survey has found that more than 260,000 people have been drinking in the morning as well. Almost a third have admitted consuming more calories since March. God, yeah, we know that. It was quite an interesting survey. It said that the increase in alcohol consumption works out at 12.6 units a week during the daytime for an average person, and then another 14.6 units in the evening. So I'm not quite sure how they do these surveys and if they go and kind of knock on doors. But anyway, it's looking like it's a big increase. And of course, people have said that they just don't feel the need. They may as well drink in the morning because, you know, they're not getting up for work and et cetera. And then it says also the increase in drinking has appeared alongside more sleep as hangovers have gone uninterrupted. So apparently they can, you can sleep the hangovers off. So I hope everyone doesn't think that makes it all right then. It does, however, say on a slightly happier note, there has been an increase in Britons intending to leave alcohol alone. A high proportion have promised to cut down on drinking, unhealthy eating, and to do more exercise. While we are still in some form of lockdown, I just appeal to you again, whatever you've got going on right now, and you know it's a lot wherever you are in the world, this is just the best time. Get some sober streaks under your belt before everything goes back to, in inverted commas, normal, if it does, because it's just a great time to just ditch the booze, look at what you're drinking, and just give yourself some time off. And if you need support, there's so much support available for you. So do have a look. I've still got that PDF, How to Get and Stay Sober During Lockdown, that little free mini ebook. If you want to grab hold of that, just send me your email address, or just go to the Sober Club, or look at the show notes, and you'll find that there. In amidst all the misery this week, I've been really cheered by the fact that I've had so many lovely messages from people who obviously have been facing up to what's going on for them during lockdown, and it's been a record week actually for people sort of saying to me how much they appreciate the podcast and love hearing people share their stories and the experts and the quitlet authors and how it's inspired them to make changes. And you know, I just love hearing that. If I can inspire one person, well, the work's done, really, isn't it? It's just amazing that people can get that strength that they need. And there's just so much amazing stuff out there, so many wonderful podcasts and fantastic Quitlit books. And to that end, I have a little appeal to you all. You may have seen some of the posts and stuff I put on Instagram, but the British Podcast Awards are happening at the moment. And obviously they've got their actual nominations that are for the categories, and of course I'm sadly I don't feature in those. I'm you know, maybe another year when I'm bigger, as it were, not around the waist, I hope. But there is a Listener's Choice Award in the British Podcast Award, and it would mean so much to me if you would be willing, if you like the podcast, to pop on there and give me a vote, because it would just be great just to, you know, have them open it up and see that there's a bunch of people who like the Alcohol Free Life podcast. So if it's possible for you to do it, I'd like you to go to britishpodcastawards.com. And in the corner, there's a little icon and you click on vote and then it comes up Listener's Choice Award. And it says search for the podcast and you just write Alcohol Free Life in there. Or if that doesn't come up for you, write Janie Lee Grace. So if you're willing to do that, I'd be so grateful. Thank you so much in advance. It's the britishpodcastawards.com and click on vote. It's the Listener's Choice Award. So, yeah, I'd really, really appreciate it. And of course, if you, you know, if you've been inspired by the podcast or you love listening to it, then it'd be great if you'd leave me a review. That really helps as well. Be fantastic. So for today's podcast, the topic is drugs. And Stephanie Chivers, someone I've known for a long while, she does the most amazing work in this arena. She's a habit and addiction specialist and has been doing this work for 15 years, you know, long before the sober curious movement and the interest in recent years. She's been working away at all of this. And so this, I hope, will be really enlightening. You know, we have a really good discussion about the state of how things are with regard to drugs and alcohol. And I think you'll find some of this quite enlightening. Stephanie Chivers. So pleased that my guest is Stephanie Chivers, a habit and addiction specialist with 15 years personal and professional experience. She teaches people how to stop drinking, take drugs and start living. And Stephanie, it's great to be able to have you on the podcast. We've been talking about this for so long and yes, not got round to it. So it's really great to connect with you. I know you've been doing this work a long, long time and have made just an amazing difference to so many people's lives. Just tell us a bit about your own story, how all of this kicked in for you.
Okay, I won't make it too long. I'll go on forever. Like pretty much everybody, I reckon, it started when I was a teenager. No, I'll try not to, because I'm 51. That's a lot of years. So, I mean, really, I think it starts when I was 35. So it's like 15 years ago. So like most people my age, you know, started drinking and then party drugs. We're that sort of generation, and that continued very up and down. Some of it was great, some of it not so great, and culminating really when I was 35, ended up in custody a couple of days before Christmas. Was actually released on Christmas Eve. What a cliche. My goodness.
I know. So hold on, was that drugs or drink or both?
Well, what's interesting is I was arrested for an alcohol related offence, but I had been picking up and dropping off cocaine for my friends just before Christmas. So I'd been using, I've been drinking and doing quite a lot of cocaine for a while, drinking far too much and obviously using too much. I think cocaine's too much, really, to be honest, for me. But I was, I don't know what lucky is the right word. I dropped everything off, but the police, either they couldn't be bothered or I was too difficult. They could have drug tested me. They didn't. Mm. It was fairly obvious with what I had in my handbag when they searched me, what was going on. But they arrested me for an alcohol-related offence, which was serious enough. It was a serious offence. And I was looking at a three-month prison sentence because I did it in a spectacular way. Never do things by halves when we do these things, do we? We tend to do it. Let's go all the way. So but actually it was a really good thing because being in custody, I had a good job. I was a project manager of a charity, two kids, owned my own property. Life wasn't great, but I wasn't really paying attention. That's what the using was about. And I had the chance to sort of sit and think while I was in custody. And it was like, it's like you're playing your life sort of in your head. You're like, well, how did I end up here? What happened? And I realized that I was the common denominator. And actually, I found that quite powerful, because if I'd got myself there, then I could get myself out. And I had one of those epiphanies where I totally understood that I was 100% responsible for my life. Because prior to that, I could definitely slip into poor me and a bit victim-y stuff. And why does this always happen to me, when actually, I'm mistress of my destiny. So walked out of there and vowed that I would not drink or take drugs ever again. Wow. I did relapse spectacularly a couple of times, but mostly for the last 15 years I've been abstinent and I've not looked back, and my mindset has completely changed and my life as a result.
Wow, amazing. So that really is one of those stories of a rock bottom, that enabled you to just see things so differently. I'm always really interested in the whole thing. Let's just talk about the drugs to start with, because despite the fact that I was in the music industry for many years, I've never taken drugs. I'm really clueless about drugs. And I suppose when I look back, it's because obviously everyone around me was taking drugs. And I suppose the reason why I chose really early on not to go down that route was actually fear, because I felt so terrified of being out of control. I suppose, that I was, my background, left a bit to be desired. And I suppose there was a little bit of me that was, that the self-preservation was so strong. I knew that to keep control, I couldn't do that. So it was fear actually that stopped me. I don't know how that fits in. It's interesting, but why did you start then? Why do people start? Why do some people start and some people don't? Because as you've already said, you don't fit the classic picture. I now know all about the drinking side of things. I know that the alcoholics and people who drink too much are not found in skips the whole time. There's a whole range of drinkers. And similarly with people who take drugs, you wouldn't have fitted necessarily the classic stereotype. As you say yourself, you had a job and things were good, at least on the surface. I've no idea what my question is. Do with it what you will.
I think that's a really good point, because we say drugs and alcohol, but actually alcohol is a drug, isn't it? And there is this really interesting division of, so I've spoken to lots of people who've said exactly what you've said, like, oh, I would never take drugs because I was too scared, or I didn't like being out of control. And I always follow with, yeah, but do you drink?
Yeah, exactly.
And they'd be like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, well, you are taking a drug. And have you got drunk? Yeah, well, then you are out of control. So it's like,
it's very true.
It's that really interesting thing of socially, isn't it? It's that stuff about, so even the fact that we say alcohol and drugs is ridiculous. We should just say drug. And then alcohol is legal. So there's this whole stuff about illegal drugs are bad and legal drugs are okay. That's the message, isn't it? Whether we say that or not. I think things are changing a bit now. But it's still very much there. I have a lot of conversations with people and it comes up. I think there's so many reasons why people start taking drugs. I mean, alcohol is slightly different, isn't it? I think if you grow up in a household where people are drinking, you're curious, maybe your parents even let you have a drink as a teenager.
Yeah, it's just very normal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very normal, so that's slightly different. I mean, interestingly, if you have parents that are sort of old party people, that can also be part of the story, because a lot of my friendship group, we're from the free party scene, so we've all got kids now, grandkids, so a lot of our kids have grown up around that, and most of those children have experimented because they grew up in an environment where we were smoking weed and going out at the weekend and doing ecstasy and other things like that. So it's that normalization, isn't it? It's not always, because I hate saying that, just because you grow up around it doesn't mean you're going to do it, but there's definitely something about that. I think as a teenager, it's normal to experiment. So there's what you see with people taking drugs is people start experimenting just as part of being a teenager.
Mm.
And some teenagers have more risk-taking behaviours than others. You know, that's just part of the makeup of being a teenager. So there's some of it is just about that's what a teenager will do. But a lot of it is also to do with peer group. So if you are in a group, not always, again, like the parenting, but if you are in with a group of people and actually they are experimenting, the chances are you are going to experiment as well.
Mm.
So my peer group, so I, interestingly, I lived in Nottingham and when the riots were on, my parents made a conscious decision to move down to Devon because it was dangerous in Nottingham. There was a lot of violence and there was a lot of drugs. Little did they know that a sleepy Devon town actually had as much violence and drugs as they had in Nottingham. It's quite funny. And because I was very different, I didn't fit in. I was bullied. So I made a conscious decision to attach myself to the naughty boys because they could look after me. It was quite a clever decision in a way. But the naughty boys smoked weed and drank and took speed and sniffed glue. And I mean, this was a long time ago, you know, aerosols, that was the thing. Mm. So I was around that from a teenager and I was part of their gang. So it was inevitable that at some point I was going to get curious.
Mm.
But then the other reasons, the other thing that we see as well is children that are struggling. So children from environments where their home isn't safe or there's some sort of abuse or they're looked after children, they're in children's homes. There is a disproportionate amount of those children that start drinking and taking drugs earlier and get into more trouble.
Mm, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. When I did my my coaching training, I was amazed actually to see the effects of sort of trauma in childhood, you know, sort of adverse childhood experiences. Wow, does that put responsibility on you as a parent? You know, you mentioned teenagers experimenting. You know, I got three of them. Oh my God. Am I right in thinking that all those years ago when you were a teenager and sampling stuff, the drug scene, if you like, what was available was very different to what's available now, and what's available now is more scary?
Yes and no. So I would say that each generation has their own thing.
Mm.
So if you think back to maybe a little bit older than me, 70s punk, like late 70s, you know, it was glue sniffing. So glue sniffing and aerosols are really dangerous. You know, there is no harm reduction information. Luckily, we've never really had a re-emergence of that. We've had little flutters of it in certain groups, but nothing like we saw back then. You know, children died from using aerosols and glue sniffing. There was no safe way to do it.
Mm.
So that each sort of generation has particular drugs. Like, you know, we were the E generation.
Mm.
That was the thing then. But now, I mean, it's not that dissimilar. So yeah, teenagers always experimenting with alcohol. So the big ones are alcohol, cannabis and ecstasy.
Yeah.
We are seeing some ketamine as well. Ketamine's been around for a while now. But they're still the big ones, alcohol and cannabis, and a bit of E. Yeah. And then you get these funny trends. So like a while ago now, it was methadone, wasn't it? I can't think what the, which was that sort of weird alternative to MDMA. So
yeah.
People were taking that because it was cheaper, but actually it was more dangerous than MDMA. So it's just, yeah. So you're always going to get these funny little things. We had a bit of a legal high moment, didn't we? These things sort of come and go, but you've got the constant alcohol throughout.
Yeah.
Cannabis.
Yeah.
Ecstasy. You get the odd emergent, like acid hasn't really been that popular since the 70s, but you get the odd sort of, you know, generation that will pick up acid and mushrooms, but not to the level it has done.
And you say that it's not necessarily more dangerous. Is there more of it? What's about the prevalence of drug taking? How is that right now?
I don't know actually on the numbers. I haven't looked at that. I haven't worked actually, interestingly, I haven't worked with young people for quite a long time, so I'm not up on the data with that. The I mean, there's a bit more cocaine around, I would say. That's the only other thing. I definitely see more people using ketamine, and the cocaine seems to be more available. So if I think back to when we were young, cocaine was something that you had on a special occasion because it's expensive.
It's very expensive, yeah.
Whereas now you can get different grades of cocaine. So you can get cheap cocaine that isn't such good quality because it's mixed with stuff. Or you can pay for like the higher quality cocaine. So actually they are, so I'm thinking about some of Elliot's friends, he's 18, they will have taken cocaine, some of them, which would have been unheard of for me. So you get, you do get those funny things that are happening. In terms of risk, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, gosh, I could go on for hours, we haven't really got time, but that's like an 8-hour training day because it's quite hard to talk about risk in a really small period of time because alcohol is our most harmful substance. And I'm more than happy to argue that with anyone. And unfortunately, what happens is people get caught up in drugs are bad. And it's not that they're not. It's just that we need to include alcohol in the conversation.
No, absolutely.
It needs to be in context. And as a parent with a teenager, the most important thing is that you're having open, honest conversations with your children. So the most important things that we used to teach parents were educating parents so they weren't saying ridiculous things like, oh, it's okay to have a drink, but don't smoke cannabis because that's the gateway. You're like, no, alcohol's the gateway.
Yeah.
So it's the misinformation. So it's educating the parents so they can have conversations, showing them where they can get facts from. But most important thing you can do as a parent is talk to your child, have these conversations, not close the door, not make it wrong or bad, so that when they try something, they tell you so that you can talk about how to make it safer, that they know they can call you, you know, if they get into trouble or they don't feel very nice. And the other thing is that they have things, so they have a mixture of peer groups. So if you notice that they only have one friendship group, and they look like they might be the friendship group that are experimenting, it's how you then encourage them to do something different, like join a club or, you know, do football or anything really, acting. So they have an interest, which then gives them access to a different friendship group that may not be experimenting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the most important things you can do.
And of course, it's not only young people, is it? You know, I mean, I have friends who... interestingly enough, I have one friend who doesn't drink particularly, but has been smoked weed for as long as I've known her. I mean, it's just what she does, know. And of course, we all know about, you know, celebrities and their cocaine and you know, on and on. I mean, I saw masses of it through the years I was in the music biz. It was absolutely everywhere. And yet, as you say, and we can't let that sentence go, you know, alcohol is the most harmful substance. Now, for years, I just didn't know that. You know, I think we've got to really hammer this home. And it's so interesting, as you say, you know, you can talk for 8 hours on training days about this stuff. But that's the one message that you have to keep saying again, because most people don't get that. I know that I didn't. I really didn't. Because as we've already discussed, in my mind, I was scared of drugs. And yet somehow I thought alcohol was fine. I mean, in fairness, I didn't actually get drunk too often, but because I was fearful of that. But it was acceptable in my mind. Let's just clear up the actual facts around alcohol then, because, you know, I have seen studies that say, I mean, not as you've just said, it's, you know, the number one most harmful substance. Tell us the reasons why, because there'll be people shouting at this saying, don't be ridiculous, heroin's worse, and etc.
So alcohol is a poison for starters. It's a toxin and it impacts on every area of our body. So if you drink regularly or in a binge, it could impact on any part of your physical health. And there's so many ways it can do that. You can't say everybody that drinks is going to get cancer. Everybody that drinks is going to have liver problems, because it's skin, it's your stomach, you know, it's heart, it's stroke. It's literally, because it's a poison, it's going in your body. So any part of your body or health can be impacted. And then there's the mental health stuff. So it impacts on the chemistry in your brain. So it's the anxiety and depression, which is really common. And what we do know is that if you want to be healthier, the less you drink, the better. And if you want optimum health, then to not drink at all. And we know that categorically. Mm. And yes, we always come across people who are in their 80s and they've drank all their life and they've smoked all their life.
Yes. It's the Uncle Jim factor, isn't it? Yeah, everyone's got an Uncle Jim who smokes, yeah. What's that brand? Capstan Full Strength. You know, drink, live till he was 98. Everyone's got one of those. Yeah,
absolutely. And genetics and lifestyle do play a part in this, but it's a lottery because you're not going to know. Well, you might know about genetics. Like if every member of your family drinks and they live till they're 80, then there's a pretty good chance genetically you're quite strong. And lifestyle also is a factor. You know, if you look after yourself, if you drink water, if you eat healthy foods, if you exercise, you know, if your general health is good, if your emotional well-being is good, then yeah, you can drink more than somebody who isn't looking after themselves, whose lifestyle isn't. So this is why we've got this whole thing at the moment about baby boomers. Poor old baby boomers are getting a bit of a fashion. So they're, because they've drank, because they've been quite affluent and they've drunk regularly, and they're not dying because they haven't drunk too much, but they're getting quite a lot of health complaints, which is actually causing a problem for the NHS.
Yeah.
Well, it was. NHS got bigger problems now, but up until a couple of months ago, that was a problem because they're getting cancers or liver problems. You know, our liver, I can't remember what the stat is, but it's something quite scary about how our...
Something like 28 million or something, unbelievable. Or 20, what is it? I don't know. That probably it's a lot.
The liver disease has just really, really gone up, you know, a huge amount. The percentage is quite scary. That in itself shows that, you know, our alcohol use is really impacting on our physical and emotional well-being. Yeah. And that's before we start talking about how it impacts on your relationship, you know, how it impacts on your job, you know, sick days,
exactly.
You know, your parenting, finances, all that type of stuff, criminal records.
Exactly. It's the knock-on effect of everything that goes around. It's not just harm to you, is it? It's very much the harm to others and the economy. And I mean, I forget who I was talking with, but we were saying about how many sick days, you know, there are, how many days of work are lost to hangovers, and it's quite unbelievable. You know, really incredible. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, the NHS and everything that's been happening recently. I mean, you know, there are those who would say how, you know, we can't go back surely to what we had, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't mean to be flippant, but, you know, the irony of this is that, you know, how can a virus cure, you know, alcoholism, in the sense that people are not rocking up to A&E on a Friday night on account of they can't. So what's actually happening? Is it that people are suffering just as bad in their own home? I mean, we read that more people are drinking during lockdown, or have done. Or is it that people are taking more responsibility? And what's going to happen when things open up again?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's just in my world and the people I have contact with, there are some people that are saying they're so pleased that they've done the work before this happened, you know, that they're in a good place and they're drinking, because this would have, you know, triggered a relapse and then they would have been drinking throughout and that would have been horrendous. And then there's some people that have really struggled with, you know, they might not have had a big impact or change their life, but it's those subtle changes, you know, routine, structure, worries, you know, just the general anxiety and not knowing what's going on, who have relapsed. And they're just picking up reports. You know, I'm connected to some people on Twitter that they are seeing, in terms of mental health services and outreach services, that people are drinking more. They might not be accessing A&E and stuff like that, but they are actually drinking more. So there will be an emergence at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really concerning as to what's going to happen with people's mental health, isn't it? I'm guessing that you also work with people who smoke. So and of course that can often go hand in hand with alcohol. And of course, for many years, you know, that was the done thing, wasn't it? Everybody smoked and drank. and it's interesting because now, of course, smoking is frowned upon in inverted commas. I mean, what's your view on that? How has that panned out? And what do you, you know, what do you think about the link between people who smoke and people who drink? Because I've heard a lot of people say, well, if I give up smoking, I'll be able to stop drinking, or vice versa, because the two are so intrinsically linked for them.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's brilliant what we've done with tobacco. If we could do the same with alcohol, it would be amazing. I mean, that's a classic example of that lots of pronged approach around public yeah. health. So, you know, in terms of restricting the advertising and changing the packaging and the education, and then that people could go and get support, you know, from the NHS, so they could have patches or medication, they could do groups, yeah. you know, there was, yeah. it was great, like the tech stuff and things like that they did. And it's really worked because tobacco was killing a lot of people.
Yeah.
And educating children in schools, that was brilliant. So they really noticed that when they educated particularly small children about tobacco, they would go home and then tell their parents or their grandparents. And actually that would have more of an effect than anything else. They did research on that. It was really interesting. So if they did the same with alcohol, like educated children in schools and changed the packaging and did a really like big public health campaign, that would be absolutely amazing.
But do you think that will ever happen? Because, you know, we're too, there's too much money involved, really. Not to put too fine a point on it. There just is, we're too intrinsically linked with the commercialization and the finances, and it is the societal norm, isn't it? It is that glue that sticks everything together.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see it from a purely selfish point of view, because I've seen the damage that alcohol does, and I've seen a lot, you know, running alcohol treatment services, people die and they die young, and it's horrible. And it's really sad, particularly when you get young teenagers who die from an overdose. You know, university students was the one that just uneducated in terms of what alcohol is. Going out drinking Freshers Week.
Exactly, rock up to Freshers Week.
And die.
I know,
From an alcohol overdose. And you're just like, what a waste. Yeah. You know, any young death is, but.
Yeah.
It's so from a selfish point of view, I would love to see it. But no, from economic point of view, I really don't know what the answer is. And I think probably Laura from Club Soda will have a better answer than me about that.
Well, definitely if we can educate more people to have alcohol-free drinks as well, that will help, won't it? It's all part of the picture. Yeah. Tell me about what alcohol services are like. I'm not sure where you fit in now. I know you offer lots of courses and trainings and all the rest of it. But for the average person who is, you know, rocks up with an addiction, whether it's drugs or alcohol, what help is there available now
in the UK?
So
in the UK, obviously there's 12-step groups and internationally as well. So there's 12-step groups everywhere, and you can go online and search for 12-step group in your area. So whether that's Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, I mean, there's literally a 12-step meeting for pretty much everything. Sex Addicts Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Codependents Anonymous. It's all a 12-step program. So you can go to NA or AA, it's fine. If you live in a city like Exeter, for instance, I mean, not at the moment, the meetings are online, but they will start again soon. And you can go to a meeting once or twice a day. So if the 12-step methodology works for you, and it doesn't always resonate with a lot of people, it's quite strict, then, you know, that's great. But if it doesn't, then there are other options. So now there are also SMART groups, so you would need to search SMART Recovery UK. I think they're in America as well, and they might also be in Australia. There aren't so many of those meetings. They're very solution focused. So if you don't like 12-step, you would probably like a SMART group, but there's not as many of them. So again, they're free and they're peer-led, so they're volunteers that run them, people with lived experience, so people who stopped drinking or using themselves. And then in the UK, we also have drug and alcohol treatment services. Now, each area is really different, which makes it difficult to figure out what works. It can be quite hard. So you probably need to Google drug and alcohol treatment services and then your area and see what comes up and just make some telephone calls. But yeah, so some services you've got alcohol specific services and some services you've got drug and alcohol, which makes things slightly different, because the services are quite different. You know, if you've got a lot of heroin users needing scripts, that's quite different to how you would work with somebody that's drinking. The treatment and the range of type of people that come in, it's quite hard to run a drug and alcohol treatment service. My preference is to have alcohol specific services. Tends to work a lot better. But you can call up and you can, depending on where it is, you would be offered an assessment. It would be a telephone assessment at the moment, which would be a lot of questions, and then they would tell you what service they'd be able to offer you. Now they might be able to offer you one-to-one support, they might be able to offer you groups, they might be able to offer you prescribing options, but different in each area and dependent on how busy they are, because they're government funded services and the funding has been reduced year on year.
Well, that was just going to be my next question about what is the funding like, and I'm guessing that this is all a bit desperate, and particularly if we're going to have people rocking up with more issues because of lockdown and mental health issues all mixed in with it. Oh my goodness, I don't know where it's all going to end. It's really concerning in terms of funding, isn't it, and availability of help.
It is, but I actually think we're in quite exciting times for that, and I've thought that for a while. I've been quite vocal about it. So yes, we have these three options: 12 steps, smart groups, drug and alcohol treatment services. Also, you can go and see your doctor. Again, might be a bit hit and miss depending on their experience, but some doctors are amazing. You don't know till you try. So you might be losing. I mean, I used to run alcohol treatment services and the funding was always really low for alcohol services, really low. And drug services were always very well funded, like ridiculously well funded.
Right.
It was insane, like a lot less clients and about 10 times the amount of staff, because it's criminal. So that carries a lot of money, because that's that public perception stuff. Like, we need to sort this out. Those services are run very differently. They've started bringing them together, which I'm not sure about that. But even in alcohol services, we used to run a very small service on hardly any money, but still did an amazing job. Now what you've got are lots of Facebook groups, lots of online forums. You know, you've got your membership group, there's Club Soda, there's One Year No Beer, I Do Bits of Work, there's there's American ones. It's just endless. And I've seen a real emergence of different people with different methodologies, and I think that's great, because alcohol is everyone and anyone. So there's lots of room for lots and lots of different people and lots of different methodologies. And I also think if you don't need a free service, you should be looking to find the people you can work with. I've always been the people that need a free service should get a free service. So if you're on benefits, or you're on a low paid job, or you're high risk, but actually if you can pay £10 a month
totally.
So I think there are options now. I don't think it needs to be that difficult.
Yeah, and of course it's becoming, so much more talked about, obviously, which is fantastic. Now, I know that, for you, when in the beginning, as you say, what changed for you was you had that sort of epiphany moment, and you changed your mindset. And I guess I'm right in saying that you believe that actually we can, to a certain extent, treat all addictions the same way, and that they all need a shift in mindset.
Yeah, I mean, I think each drug and each route that you use is slightly different. Then, but then within that, people are different as well. So in the same way, like you said before about drug users, there are lots of different types of heroin users. It's not just stereotypical heroin user that we see, or it's in the newspapers. You know, there are people that have jobs that use heroin on a Saturday night. You know, people hate it when I say that, but that's the reality. Yeah. There are recreational heroin users. Nobody wants to talk about it, but there are.
So
it's really interesting, like human beings, we are pleasure seekers, you know, so we've always taken drugs since the beginning of time. We always will do. And that's why I'm a huge fan of education so that people can make an informed choice about all drugs. I think children should be educated in school as teenagers about every substance, and so should the parents, because it's here, it's a way of life, and we need to talk about it rather than pretending it's not happening or it's a bad thing. Because actually, apart from the alcohol, for quite a lot of people, smoking cannabis, taking acid, doing mushrooms is actually a pleasurable or a spiritual thing.
Well, I'm just going to ask you about cannabis, and which of course, you know, the debate continues to rage. I'd love to know your views on that.
So cannabis, I used to work in an adolescent psychiatric unit, an acute unit. And so, yes, we did used to see particularly teenage boys. And I think that's more about that time when teenage boys would be more likely to experiment with drugs than girls. So we did used to see some of them come in with a drug-induced psychosis, which would be triggered by cannabis. And then obviously I've worked with older people with mental health as well, and we would see that again. So there is definitely, I've seen it in all the services I've worked with around mental health and cannabis. Now, the research isn't conclusive about that, but anybody who's worked within any sort of service will have seen enough people to know there's definitely a thing there. And that's like that with any drug. You know, alcohol is different for different people. You and I can go out on a night out and drink, and our behaviour will be completely different. It will impact on us completely different. There are people that talk about drinking and they say it feels like a stimulant. Then there are people that talk about drinking and they say that it makes them fall asleep. You know, it's that. So some people will smoke cannabis and enjoy it, and for them it will be a relaxant, it will help them take the pain away, it will ease their anxiety, it will help them with depression. But then for a smaller number of people, it will trigger or impact on their mental health. So like with anything, if you use anything and it doesn't agree with you, then don't take it. If you continue to take something that doesn't agree with you and impacts on your mental health, you need to get help. Because that's, you know, almost self-harm, really. You're not making good decisions for yourself.
Yeah. And you know, as well, you know, you mentioned that, you certainly touched on the fact that, you know, the 12-step programs for so many different types of addiction. What's your view on the addictive personality, and whether, you know, that you're always going to end up with cross addictions? If you stop one thing, you're then going to go to the next and the next. And how common is that, do you think?
I'm not a fan of labels, as you know, Janie.
We can call it whatever we want. But I just wonder how much you come across it, that people do believe, whether it's true or not, do they believe that they're going to move to the next thing, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, when I talk to people, something that some people will say, and they'll say, oh, I've got an addictive personality. And then I'll have a conversation with them about that. Like, is it useful to think like that? You know, that sounds like a limiting belief to me.
Yeah, definitely. You
know, personally, I don't want to say I've got an addictive personality. I say that I like to become incredibly focused on certain things because that's the reality of the way it is. I think you can, and there's been enough research now about neuroscience that we can learn anything, can't we? We're going to have natural things, natural leanings, but that doesn't mean that we can't learn something that isn't natural to us. It doesn't mean we can't change something. So if I work with somebody who says that, then I encourage them to drop that really and think about, is that useful? And actually, how do they want to be? Yes. People do, when they stop using one thing, sometimes replace it for something else. But that's usually because they're not doing the work in terms of what's underneath it. Now, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong. It just means that maybe they're not ready to, in the same way as, like, you stop drinking and you eat loads of sugar in the evening. So say you were drinking a bottle of wine a night, you stop drinking, that's great. but now actually you're eating a cake a night or, you know, something like that. It's the same habit. You're doing it, whether it's pleasure, treat, reward, comfort, you know, anything, whatever it is. So it's, okay, there's something going on here. I need to deal with what's going on underneath there and do the work. Mm. And a few people will keep, you know, they start with heroin, you know, maybe they'll go on to a script, maybe then they'll go on to ketamine, maybe then they'll go to cannabis, and they're sort of coming down on the ladder of harm reduction, mm. which isn't a bad thing if you're supported by a specialist to do that, because they're taking less and less risk with each drug. And if they keep doing the work, then eventually they're going to get to a point where they're not going to take anything, hopefully. That's
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about your programs then, because the iChange 21, I mean, well, explain to us. I'm guessing the 21 is linked to the amount of time it, you know, you can hopefully make a change with a habit.
Well, it was. It's a website name I'm stuck with at the moment. But, I mean, I started out with an online coaching program because I had this thing that I wanted people to have access to something that was confidential and accessible and affordable, but also really good quality. So for someone like me, I didn't want to go to a 12-step meeting, I wasn't going to tell my doctor, and there was no way I was going to walk into a treatment service. So then what do I do? I mean, this was 2015, 2016, so there wasn't a lot around. So I just created the online coaching program because of that, and that just ticks along nicely. I tend to do quite a bit of one-to-one coaching and group coaching, mostly because, you know how it is. People are individuals. So yes, you can give people an online coaching program and that's great, but there's nothing better than really drilling down what's going on individually for them. Really.
And I know you've got on that website, you've got, if cocaine, for example, is an issue, tell us about the videos that you have available.
Yeah, so I've just put together 4 short free videos about how to get started with stopping with cocaine. So the first one is, you know, what is cocaine and what are the risks? The second one is about alcohol and cocaine, because it can be really common that people drink and then they use cocaine as well. So they get really stuck in that. But actually, if they change their drinking habits or take a break from drinking, they find that they can ditch the cocaine really easy. So you can sort of use that to help them stop using cocaine. We talk about triggers, so people, places, feelings, habits, changing all that up. And then some stuff that I want people to be aware of in terms of the things that can happen when you stop using cocaine, things to be aware of. So yeah, I think I've sent you that link. Mm.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll have a look. That's super useful. I mean, wouldn't it be great if your stuff was in schools? I'm sure that's something you've thought of. It would be amazing, wouldn't it, to have those programs in schools?
Yeah, I mean, that used to be one of my jobs. I used to love it, going into schools, teaching the kids. It was just fantastic. But again, that was a funding thing. So it was happening. And then it was, you could only work with certain children, which I was never comfortable with. So they would handpick the children they thought were high risk. I just thought, God, how bloody
awful. Oh my goodness, that's labelling them to start with, isn't it?
I know, it's just like, oh my God. So yeah, that was horrendous. And then you had this whole thing with schools where they're like, oh, we don't want the drugs worker in because we don't want people to think we've got a drugs problem. And it's like, seriously, you've got a big comprehensive, kids are taking drugs in here. Like, get over yourself.
Yeah.
And then it all went to PSHE. That meant then that the teachers could tick a box, and as long as they covered it, which, of course, is disastrous because teachers are not drug and alcohol specialists. So the kids are running rings around them and they're not listening to them. So, yeah, very disappointing. Mm.
So, leaving us on a positive note.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. What's you choose. Do you want to give us your top tip, or do you want to just tell us maybe some of the amazing benefits that that people find when they do ditch both the booze and the other drugs?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think my top tip is always educate yourself first, and educate yourself with the facts. So in terms of drugs, one of the best books is Professor David Nutt's book, Drugs Without the Hot Air. And his website too, Drug Science, which has got some information on there. And if anybody's got any questions, they can always ask me. His book Drink is also really good in terms of factual stuff with alcohol.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on the podcast. I'm hoping he'll come on.
Brilliant. It'll
be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
But you're absolutely right. You know, that I mean, you know, just to pick up on that again, it, you know, it sounds like it would be obvious, wouldn't it, sort of educate yourself, but actually it isn't. You know, when I think back, I mean, I've said this so many times, but it never ceases to amaze me that I, you know, my great age that I am, did not know about alcohol. I just didn't know that it was addictive. How mad is that? You know, we don't, do we? So you're quite right. We do. The first step is properly educate yourself and recognize your own part in it all. Take responsibility, because it ain't going to come from outside.
Yeah, it's really important. And it's, I think it's quite hard to get really drilled down to that really factual information, because even I've been immersed in this world. It wasn't really until I worked in alcohol treatment services that I really understood what alcohol was, you know, and did the training within there. And I'd been a drugs and alcohol worker before I ran treatment services. Right. You know, I was working with drug and alcohol clients, children and families, but it wasn't until I actually physically got into alcohol services that I really, really learned about it on a whole other level. So yeah, it's great to see, you know, Professor David Nutt's book out, because it's all in there, which is brilliant. So educate yourself, definitely. Get some support, but I would say that. Now, get some support, because it doesn't matter who it is, just somebody that works for you, resonates for you, because it will be so much easier, like anything. You don't need to struggle on your own. And actually, stopping drinking, stopping taking drugs can be an amazing experience. It's literally the best thing I've ever done. My life is unrecognizable. In 15 years, thousands of people, nobody has ever come back to me and complained.
No, you never hear anyone say, oh, do you know what? I wish I had stopped that.
No, they don't. And people go on and do amazing things and live their lives. You know, even if it's just as simple as being happy with their partner or feeling good or feeling healthy, you know, you're going to have a longer, healthier, happier life. And actually, I also think it's about believing in change and believing in possibility. And that's where the support comes in, because people don't always believe they can. But if you get support, then you can borrow that belief and possibility from that person. Because if you work with somebody that's done it with lots of people, they know. They're like,
yeah.
Work with loads of people that have done that. Yeah, not a problem. We can do this.
Yeah, it's that confidence, that positivity, isn't it? That's what makes it amazing. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So give us your website then, Stephanie.
It's iChange 21, 21 the number. So iChange, 21 the number .com. But if you Google Stephanie Chivers, endless things come up.
Hopefully not details of your rock bottom moment.
No, because it was 15 years ago, and I've looked. You can't. I was actually in the newspaper, but no, I'm not on the internet.
No, exactly. Hide. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting, and this is one of the things that sometimes almost stops people from stopping, is that they're so fearful of having to face the shameful stuff in the past. You know, they're so terrified of what's going to come up for them that they sort of can't make that first move. But, you know, we just have to convince them it's worth it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can let the guilt and shame go. God,
exactly.
I've got terrible things in my past. If I can work through it, anybody can.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Janie. Lovely to speak with you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'll put the links to those books that were recommended in the show notes as well. And as I said to Stephanie, I'm really hoping that I'll be able to get David Nutt as a guest on the podcast. It'll be interesting to interview him about drink. Of course, if you want to check out the Sober Club, we would love to have you. We are going to be closing the doors for a bit at some point. We've got a few fabulous extra features that we're going to bring in. So if you want to get in now while we're open. It's very supportive and just such a lovely, lovely community. And though I say so myself, some amazing, amazing resources in there, because I'm so lucky. I get great people to offer fabulous, fabulous stuff. Coming up on the podcast,
I've got a few interesting guests in the pipeline. Some of them are not totally firmed up yet. It's amazing how difficult it is to get a hold of people at the moment. You know, people are super busy despite lockdown. And of course, you know, everyone's getting Zoom fatigue, aren't they? Getting fed up with constantly being online. But hopefully we've got some cool guests coming up. I'm definitely going to be interviewing Lotta Dan, Mrs. D, as in Mrs. D is going without, and the new book. But that's not for a while, because I think the main promo in the UK is later on in the year. But very much looking forward to that. If you have any suggestions for me of people that you think I should get on the podcast, as I said earlier, I would I'd love to hear you know, your suggestions. There'll be people I just had not thought of at all, and you know, if you can bring them to me, or just make the suggestion and I'll reach out, that would be great. I just, what I love about doing these particular shows is that we can bring such a wide range of stuff that can hopefully inspire you know, people, whatever stage they're at, or you know, whatever kind of angle. I've had some lovely messages from people saying, oh, you know, I didn't think I would enjoy that one, because it's not a topic that I'm usually interested in, but I still found that I loved hearing about it. You know, this is the thing, I think, when you finally make that decision to ditch the booze, and you realise that some stuff's got to change in your life, you do just become much more open and aware and conscious. And, you know, right now that's a great thing. So you become just much more open and interested. I thought it was lovely, actually, in last week's podcast with Amanda and Jardine from the Sober Lush, when they were talking about, I think it was Jardine was saying how she'd been and visited a friend and who was keeping bees, and she'd done this whole study of bees. Whereas, you know, when you're drinking and you're drinking days, who's got time for that stuff? You know, it's just a case of have another drink. So definitely does expand your horizons. People do just amazing things and just find that they feel brave enough to do so much more, you know, when they've removed the alcohol obstacle. So you can find me, as always, on Instagram at Janie Lee Grace, and on Facebook at Janie Lee Grace Loves. There's a free Facebook group, Imperfectly Natural Self-Care, if you want stuff around health and well-being. If you go to my imperfectlynatural.com site, there's a bunch of competitions there to win some drinks. I think we've still got some Boucher to give away, some Sea Arch, some Binary drinks, Sippling. You know, I'm trying to ply you with some nice alcohol-free drinks if you want to try and win them. And obviously, if you go to thesoberclub.com, you'll find some blog posts there. You can grab hold of that PDF. How to get and stay sober during lockdown. I've just written a blog post on PAWS, P-A-W-S, post-acute withdrawal symptoms. And, you know, you might find that interesting. If you're a few months in, it can kick in at any time up to 2 years, they say. And it's like, really, seriously, after I've had the first hideous bit, you know, of ditching the booze, have I really got to have more symptoms? But as I explain in that article, it's manageable. But I think it really helps if you know what it is, you know, when it hits you. So you might want to have a look at that blog post. I look forward to joining you same time next week. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.